This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Welcome to Radio Reading Services and the Smithsonian Magazine. Since we completed the March issue last week, we are turning our attention to a combined issue April and May 2024. Our features in this issue include Slugs in Paradise. These jewels of Australia's reefs are definitely not your garden variety gastropods. Las Vegas bets on the future. As water shortages grow, the city is putting its chips on conservation. Greek Revival. Athens comes alive with new attractions that nod to the ancients. Light in the Forest. Scientists work to increase sun bear numbers by mapping their range. Taking Up the Torch. A movement of ardent young men helped elect Lincoln and spark war. A rescue mission. Besieged woodpeckers find a new home on a military training ground. And finally, Malawi's Island in the Sky. A steep, lush massive, the country's highest peak at 10,000 feet, beckons climbers. In the prologue section, under American Icon tab, the lemonade stand, and a historical refresher. MLB's King of Stats, and inventions that struck out. Under Textiles, Weaving the Past. Under Origins, the Lending Library. And under National Treasure, Heavenly Throne. And now we're going to turn our attention to the lead article in this double issue, entitled Slugs in Paradise. And I wish you could see these beautiful photographs. They are so full of color. Psychedelic hedgehogs, purple pineapples, living strawberries. Welcome to the magical world of nudibranches by Helen Sullivan. When he picks me up at the airport, Gary Cobb is wearing a nudibranch baseball cap, a gray t-shirt covered in illustrations of nudibranches of various kinds, and wraparound sunglasses known colloquially in Australia as speed dealers. It is a bright, clear winter's day in Mooloolaba on Australia's Sunshine Coast. I own 15 of these shirts, Cobb, age 73, says later, as we walk to a restaurant in a small shopping center. That's all I wear, and I do that because it's a talking point. He stops in at a dive shop. A young woman behind the counter greets Cobb warmly. He's just a bloody legend, she tells me. You can quote me on that. She draws tiny hearts on his tank and flippers. Cobb points out a hand-painted mural depicting an underseen scene. Now look closer. I got them to put the nudibranches on there, he says. And among the octopus and schools of fish, there they are, tiny, powerfully cute, neon-colored sea slugs. Nudibranches, pronounced various way, including nudibranchs, are a family of sea slugs. They typically lack shells and are distinguished by their exposed gills, which is what gives them their name. Naked gills. They can be as small as the half moon of your pinky fingernail or as long as 20 inches. And they come in a gleeful variety of colors and shapes, though there are two main types. Dorids often resemble tiny rabbits with their rhinophores or two antenna-like protrusions on their heads like bunny ears and a ring of feathery gills on their backs. There is also a Spanish dancer, a slug in the form of a bright red, wavy flamingo shawl. eyelids are covered in serrata, fleshy growths that resemble anemone 1 tendrils, only shorter. There is one eyelid that looks like a psychedelic hedgehog, and several that wouldn't be out of place at the tip of an orchid stem. The blue dragon has long talon-like serrata on the end of perpetually outstretched arms, as though it were flying. It is really, really difficult not to compare them to Pokemon characters. There are around 3,000 nudibranch species all over the world, from the Arctic to the tropics, but roughly a third of them are found in the waters off Australia. And Gary Cobb, a retired American expat, might just be their biggest fan and advocate. Cobb answers the phone, Nudibranch Central. How may I direct your call? He sells merchandise that says, Fear no nudibranch. He runs a Facebook group called Nudibranch Central with more than 33,000 members. Scroll down its page and you'll find post after post of nudibranchs photographed by divers around the world and identified by Cobb. It is a hobby that takes hours a day. He dives a few times a week at La Balsa Park, which he refers to as his backyard, moving slowly along the floor of the Mulala River just before it opens out to the sea. His average dive time is 4 hours, a marathon in scuba terms, though he has been underwater for as long as six. Cobb dives for nudibranchs, he says, because it's the greatest value for money, a way to spend as long as possible in the water rather than seeing a couple of things and rushing back to the boat. When pressed for something a little less economical, he says, number one, they don't run away. Everything else with gills runs away. Number two, look at them. All that color, that variation. Number three, not many people know about them, and that's a challenge. I want everyone to know about them. He maintains a website on which he publishes detailed reports of every dive, including photographs of every species of nudibranch he sees. A post from last summer, quote, with a holiday today and winter clear water, another dive was in order, and boy was it clear. A 190 millimeter Dendrodorus denisoni was found, as well as two Bursatella lychee. Slime trails gave them away. End quote. He has designed six nudibranch identification apps, one for each of the regions worldwide where they are found. In 2006, he co-wrote a field guide to nudibranchs called Undersea Jewels. My life is nudibranchs, he says. My mission in life is to tell everyone about nudibranchs. When we first spoke, I asked when might be a good time to visit from Sydney. Now? There is no better time than now. So why don't you just hop on a plane? 2 days later, I did. Indigenous Australians have always had their own names for the creatures that live on their land and in their oceans, but only about 30% of Australia's plants and animals have scientific names. Those that haven't been identified through Western taxonomy end up falling through the net of conservation programs. Naming is a really critical, important step in seeing biodiversity. Lisa Kirkendale, a taxonomist and curator of mollusk at the Western Australian Museum, says. The name triggers all of this other information. If you are missing that first step, she explains, it is difficult to take any steps toward conservation. Kirkendale describes Cobb's work as an important part of the village it takes to look after any species. Few scientists are able to dive almost daily for years on end the way Cobb has done. Without him, conservation efforts would be slower and more scattershot, possibly too slow to save some species that will now be identified, named, and tracked. Once an animal is named, its ecology can be recorded. The number living in the wild can be recorded. Its evolution can be studied to determine what adaptations it has that are important to its life. It has direct impacts on conservation. One of the most critical parts of Cobb's work is its regularity. He documents nudibranchs every week of the year, across seasons, over decades. Taking stock and doing a census is really important, says Kirkendale, especially when it comes to proposals related to climate change or development. Cobb works regularly with taxonomist Marta Pola, a biologist at the Autonomous University of Madrid. She discovered Cobb through his Facebook page. "I began to realize that many species that he saw very often were new to science, which obviously interested me," she wrote over email. "For me, being in Madrid, far from the sea, it's great to be in contact with people who are in the sea almost every day and can take photos and help me to collect." Cobb selects slugs and sends them to museums in Australia, which they lend to Pola, who describes and names new species and studies their evolution. Morphology and DNA. "Together they have named as many as 20 new species," says Pola, "with more to come. Without his specimens," she continues, "that would not have been possible." One of the species, small, white, with dark brown markings and wing-like limbs on its tail, imagine, if you will, the head of a magician's rabbit with the tall wings of an airplane, is named after him, Murphydorus cobbi. Cobb was born in Miami Beach, Florida. After high school, during which his primary interests were surfing and art, he began studying design at the Pratt Institute in New York. But during his second year, his mother died by suicide. "She was an alcoholic," Cobb says. "And when she died, he learned that she had spent the money for his college tuition. So he left New York and went back to Miami Beach, where he worked in a bike shop for a while before heading to California to surf, rock climb, and work as a graphic designer and skydive instructor. He moved to Australia in 1990, having befriended several Australian surfers, and chose the Sunshine Coast for its proximity to the Great Barrier Reef. In 1996, he was scuba diving in Vanuatu in the South Pacific when he saw something bright on the bow of a shipwreck. He moved closer. It was red with yellow polka dots, with about 4 inches long. It wasn't swimming away, he recalls. Wow. When he got back to shore, he learned it was a nudibranch, Ginormdorus aruta. After returning to Australia, he met a nudibranch expert on the Sunshine Coast who gave him a box of books on them. It was like hog heaven, Cobb says. When asked how turning over rocks for hours to find slugs could possibly compare to the adrenaline of jumping out of planes, he replies, "How do you feel on Easter morning?" "Every day is like Easter to him," he says. "Same backyard, but new, brightly colored objects hidden in new places." Cobb has identified 789 species of nudibranchs in the 0.2 miles of the Mooloora River, ending in the open ocean. Part of the reason for this diversity is the tides. High tide sweeps nudibranchs and their larvae into the river, and many of them stick around. If hunting is like looking for colorful eggs on Easter Sunday, then the tides are the Easter bunny. Along with being highly specialized animals, nudibranchs are also highly specialized eaters. Each species depends on one kind of prey, ranging from sponges and corals to anemones, jellyfish, and even other nudibranchs. Jessica Goodhart is an assistant curator of malacology, the study of mollusks, at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. She studies how several species of nudibranchs steal stinging cells from their prey, anemones and jellyfish, to use in their own defense. Nudibranchs eat using a radula, which is a kind of like a sharp, hard tongue, says Goodhart. Watching a nudibranch eat isn't at first class all that different from watching a slug on a leaf. But if the nudibranch is feeding on a venomous animal, what is happening is actually very dramatic. Anemones and jellyfish have special cells called synodites, which, when stimulated by touch or a change of chemicals in the water, launch tiny harpoon-like structures called nematocysts at enemies and prey. As the nudibranch tries to grasp its prey, the prey fires its tiny harpoons at the nudibranch. But the nudibranch has a shield, something that stops the nematocysts from firing their venomous harpoons. You see them pull back often initially, says Goodhart, but eventually they're able to latch on and continuously eat those tissues. Scientists aren't sure how, but one theory is the power lies in the nudibranch slime. The slugs graze on their living prey, and as they digest their food, something incredible happens. The nudibranchs are able to turn the harpoons from their prey into ammunition they can use themselves. Unfired nematocysts pass through the nudibranch's gut, where they are broken down into cells. And the cells are then broken down, releasing the nematocysts' cells. The nudibranch's digestive system branches out into tips of its body, the serrata. There's all of these branches of the digestive system, and the nematocysts move through those out into the very tips of these finger-like projections off the back of the animals, she says. It's as if our intestines extended out into our hands and fingers. In those tips is a specialized sac, a cytosac, where the undigested nematocysts are stored. When a threat approaches, the nudibranchs will orient their finger-like serrata toward the threat and then fire off the nematocysts they've stored. Blue dragons, or Glaucus antilicus, look as though they actually have hands and fingers. An inch long and electric blue, they sequester the stinging cells from the Portuguese man-of-war they eat, arming themselves against predators. To reach their prey, they swallow air bubbles so they float to the surface of the ocean, where they lie on their backs. Their blue and gray coloring means that from far below, they appear the same color as the sky, and from the sky, they blend into the water. Goodhart designed an experiment that allowed her and her colleagues to see nematocysts moving through a nudibranch's body in real time, something that hadn't been done before. The hardest part was getting the nudibranch to stay still. Eventually, she worked out that she could bribe it to stick to one spot by placing food on a glass plate under the microscope. The slugs are like the video game character Kirby from Super Smash Bros., says Goodhart. When Kirby inhales objects or creatures, he gains their powers. And it's not just venom. Petrolidia ianthina, which looks like a Chinese dragon puppet, has long, wavy, army, green, and electric purple serrata. It can photosynthesize using the photosynthetic cells from creatures it eats. After being swallowed by the slug, the algal cells continue to live in its digestive system. Their chloroplast photosynthesizing and producing energy, which is then used by the slug. Other nudibranch species do the same with zooxanthellae, or single-celled organisms that live symbiotically on coral polyps. But their single biggest superpower is surviving, says Kirkendale. A soft body without a shell to hide in is a really big step to take. It's brave, and they've done some tricky things in order to kind of be able to survive on a busy coral reef. It's one of the things Pola loves most about nudibranchs. They appear delicate and fragile, she says. They seem really defenseless. But they are some of the best protected animals in the animal kingdom. As for Cobb, Pola appreciates that he wants to show that science belongs to everyone and not just a few. And more importantly, that collaborating is essential, she says. It's not just his passion for diving, but sharing that information with everyone else, no matter what. Cobb and I are eating at a busy restaurant when he suggests an experiment. Go over to that table and ask them if they know what a nudibranch is. At the table are three adults with a young baby. I approach a little sheepishly and ask the question. It is zero for three, not counting the baby. It just kills me that so many people don't know about them, Cobb says. On the way back to the car after our meal, he stops seven more people. Excuse me, can I ask you something? Do you know what a nudibranch is? Met with furrowed brows, nose, and shakes of the head, he opens his jacket like a flasher to show off his t-shirt. They are these things, sea slugs. We are almost at the car when he approaches another young family, a man, woman, and a toddler. Excuse me, do you know what nudibranchs, the man says before Cobb finishes. You know what they are? He asks. Nah, I heard you telling the guys next to us, and I said, he's not going to get me. But even if this bystander doesn't know anything about nudibranchs, it becomes clear after chatting for a while that he knows who Cobb is. Oh, so you're the one always diving at Balsa Park, he says. Cobb says he's been diving an average of 4 hours twice a week, every week of the year for the past 21 years. That means he has spent about a year of his life underwater. When I tell him this over text, he replies instantly, not enough. We meet for a dive at 7 on a Sunday morning. Joining us are several people Cobb has turned into nudibranch enthusiasts. As they suck themselves into suits, they psych each other out with the cold. The air is 55 degrees. David Parker's lips usually turn blue, they say. Parker works in telecommunications, but got hooked on nudibranch hunting and photography after meeting Cobb on a nudibranch dive he was running. Fran Roberts and Navar Fori, a South African couple who are boaters by day and divers by weekend, are so determined to avoid the cold that they have bought dry suits and are currently applying the several complicated layers to their bodies. As Cheryl Wright, a high school English teacher, shows me, the flipper's Cobb has sliced into a sharp fork-like shape to make moving along the riverbed easier. I snap the ankles of my rented wetsuit over booties, shove my head into a hood, and tuck my sleeve into the gloves Cobb has lent me. After a glance at the park with its carefree teenage surfers and cozy tired parents with their cozy sleeping newborns, I descend. At 68 degrees Fahrenheit, the water is warmer than the air above it, and as we sink 10 feet to the bottom of the river, I enjoy the calm and quiet. Then I look back. Behind me is Cobb's small fleet of divers furiously turning over rocks. When Cobb spots a nudibranch underwater, he makes bunny ears with his fingers. When he knows I've seen it, he pumps his fists. The first one we see is the species named after Cobb, Murphydorus cobi. It is tiny, barely bigger than a grain of rice, and shaped like a rabbit molded from a fleck of mochi. I can just make out the rhinophores. Then we float over Tenelia SP24, shaped like the head of a miniature white asparagus and sliding along the sandy bottom. Then Cobb makes a sort of honking sound and points out a mating pair of Murphy Doris Kobe, attached head to toe. Nudibranch hunters are the bird watchers of the sea. They move slowly through their hunting ground and are excited by the smallest creatures. You can get the feeling that there were a whale to swim over as blocking out the sun, they'd offer it a short, polite glance and get back to looking at nudibranchs. We continue and soon see several larger slugs, Tenilia sibbogoi, an inch or so long, bright purple and orange with tendrils like a sea anemone's, a feather boa for a shrimp, as Cobb makes his way slowly along the floor of the river. He turns over stones or waves the water against larger rocks to blow away what looks like sea dust. He delicately brushes back fragile underwater plants and scans the floor or rock with his face an inch away from it. Then Cobb points out a long, frilly, yellow ribbon of something dangling off a rock. Nudibranch eggs. Nudibranchs are hermaphrodites. They have both male and female reproductive organs and can act as both at the same time. They can't fertilize themselves, but will exchange sperm with a mate. Some dords have penises in their necks and will mate top to tail with others, inseminating each other simultaneously. Chromodorus reticulata, a raspberry-colored slug, has a disposable penis, which it can regrow and use within 24 hours. Each nudibranch, after its role in the sea sponge, will then lay eggs masses, orange, yellow, blue, or pink spirals, some containing millions of eggs. The larvae that hatch from these eggs will be transparent, with shells that are transparent too, making them harder for predators to spot. They'll float along among plankton until one day they cast off their shells and undergo a metamorphosis. Like an office worker changing from a gray suit into drag, they grow new, fabulous tissues. This stage is called settling, and working out what makes the nudibranchs decide to settle is one of the biggest challenges of breeding or culturing them in laboratories, Goodhart says. We don't know what cues they use, like if there's certain chemical cues or anything that they use to settle. And so often, you can't keep a full life cycle. She uses Bergia Stephanie A, which can be cultured in a lab. She describes the species as bland for a nudibranch, translucent orange with white spots along its body, and iridescent bluish serrata. We've come to a good stopping place, and we'll pick up next week and finish this article. It's not much left, but we don't have the time. So on behalf of Radio Reading Services, this has been Gail Fisher. We thank you so much for tuning us in and listening today. We wish you a great day, a wonderful week ahead. Please stay safe and healthy, and again, thanks for listening.